The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Six days away from seeing Dak and the Cowboys back in action. They take on the Buccaneers to start the season. We've also got some really good Browns discussion coming your way today, as some numbers tell you the Browns might regress, but someone here is going to tell you why that is false. You see those someones who will be on the show today for the next hour: Mina Kimes, Marcus Spears, and Jeff Darlington. More from you guys in a moment, but let's get back to the Cowboys and Dak Prescott. And of course, you see him on the field once again. He'll be back in less than a week. Second year of Mike McCarthy. First year of new defensive coordinator Dan Quinn. Zeke is back. CeeDee Lamb, Amari Cooper. What will the defense look like, especially against Brady and the Bucs offense right out of the gate? The spotlight, though, is certainly on Dak. And for more on that, we bring in our Ed Werder from Texas. Ed, what did Dak have to say this afternoon as he spoke to the media?
Yeah, Laura, it was interesting because head coach Mike McCarthy described Dak Prescott as being full go in terms of his participation. And he said the quarterback's physical status will not require the game plan for the season opener against Tampa Bay to be limited in any way. Prescott, as you know, hasn't played at game speed, confronted a live pass rush, been hit or tackled in nearly 11 months since he fractured his right leg and dislocated his ankle in week 5 against the Giants. Prescott today spoke to reporters following practice here a short time ago, and in his first availability in more than 3 weeks, Prescott left no doubt about his health and preparedness for week 1, saying he's definitely ready from his shoulder to his leg to his mind. He said, "I'm ready to go." Here's more.
I'm excited to have that behind me. I don't think about injury. I don't think about now the time that I missed. I was just laughing the other day with a teammate about the moment that it happened. So to be that far beyond it, I'm just excited to get back to football and just play this game without those thoughts and without those emotions. And as I said, just getting back to doing what I love. I mean, obviously I have high expectations for myself, and I plan to come out starting fast. Obviously, I've said before, I don't necessarily want the numbers that I had that early because we weren't winning games and we weren't being competitive early, and that's why some of those numbers came about. But, I plan to come out better than I was last year, to be honest. And as I said, that's just the work that I've put in going all the way back to February when I got back on the field.
When asked about beginning his comeback against Tom Brady and the defending Super Bowl champion Buccaneers on the road in the very first game of the entire NFL season, Laura, Prescott said he loves night games and primetime and considers this the perfect stage. He said it's what the NFL and the world needs.
Yeah, Dak Prescott, no stranger to the spotlight, and he thrives in those moments. You know, so much of the conversation, Ed, has been around the offense for Dallas and the anticipation of that. A lot of eyeballs on Dallas's defense with Dan Quinn as the new defensive coordinator. What have you seen from that side of the ball?
Well, you know, the Cowboys have referred to first-year defensive coordinator Dan Quinn as their most significant offseason acquisition. And Mike McCarthy's spoken about creating a team identity and has emphasized the importance of playing complementary football. And he concedes that the Cowboys failed in that regard last year, even before Dak Prescott's injury. You know, the concern for them, I think, defensively has to be inside on the defensive line, a weakness that was exploited consistently last year against the run. If they can't control the inside run game, then the Cowboys defense won't be able to take full advantage of what they should do well, which is rush the passer with DeMarcus Lawrence and Randy Gregory and first-round draft pick Micah Parsons. But, you know, Quinn's indicated he's going to create a lot of substitutional packages, give players a chance to use their expertise in situations they feel they can win every snap when they're on the field. And Parsons is going to play a lot of different spots. And, Laura, Quinn's historically has designated his corners as left and right, but they cross-trained their corners some this training camp so that they could use the size of Trayvon Diggs and match him up against bigger receivers. And Mike Evans of Tampa Bay certainly fits that profile in week 1.
Yeah, that's going to be a matchup to watch for sure. Thanks so much to Ed. We're just, 6 days, 4 hours and so until kickoff of the NFL season. And after allowing their most points in franchise history last year, the Cowboys made their defense a priority this offseason, selecting 8 defensive players in the 2021 draft, including their first 6 picks. That's the most defensive players Dallas has selected in a draft in almost 30 years, of course, highlighted by Micah Parsons. And Marcus, you just heard Ed illustrate the way that they are planning this defense to look like. What do you expect from the Cowboys D?
Yeah, Ed brought up the concern that I have, and that's in the interior. And the guy that I think about is Quinn Bohanna, who you and I followed at the University of Kentucky. And I know he's a run stopper. He's a big physical presence in the center of that defense. But here's the deal. This defense is going to revolve around their linebackers, because they are the most multiple players in this defense. And obviously, you got to have things right on the back end for a communication standpoint. And that's what I believe Dan Quinn is going to improve so much better than what they had under Mike Nolan. There was a misunderstanding about the job that these guys were doing down in, down out. We talked about it a number of times on the show. We talked about it when we were in studio. And at times, like, you want the personnel to show up and them to show you, I'm not good enough to play this position. But when you got guys out there guessing and they trying to play football, it's a recipe for disaster. So you go out, you have a defensive draft. I want to see them solidify the 3 technique, the interior defensive tackle spot, and also the shade technique, which is the defensive tackle that lines up over the center. And I feel like if they can get the center of this defense fixed and the center of this defense to play stout on the defensive line, this defense will be markedly improved.
Yeah, I agree with Marcus. The strength of this team is now the linebacker position. I mean, Micah Parsons, who was their first-round draft pick, he looks fantastic. I mean, in the preseason so far, looks like he was shot out of cannon on every snap, stopping the run, willing tackler, explosive pass rusher. He can cover. He's really a chess piece for Dan Quinn to use in the middle of that defense. The problem is, I don't want to say everything else, but defensive tackle, which Marcus alluded to, and then really that secondary. Ed talked about how they want Trayvon Diggs to match up with Mike Evans. That's great, but the Bucs have like 3 or 4 other weapons, and I don't know how Dallas is going to cover them all. So while I love Parsons and I love what he has shown so far, I am not optimistic right now about the rest of this group.
You know, Mina, you know who else actually I think helps this defense out a lot? Dak Prescott. I know that we talk so much about what he obviously adds when he comes back to the offense. But last year, without Dak Prescott, this Cowboys offense was converting 36% of their third downs. It was like 30th in the NFL when Prescott was out. Before that, the 4 years that Prescott was in there, they were always top 10 in third down conversions, often even higher than that. Prescott is one of the best in the league at sustaining drives. And what does that do? It keeps your defense off the field and well rested. So when they are in the game, they're not constantly exhausted and getting gashed. I know it's not about Dan Quinn and the talent on the defense. I know that's the most important thing. But the idea of having an offense that will stay on the field longer, I think also is going to help this Cowboys defense out tremendously.
Yeah, it's a really important
thing. Jeff Darlington, you better preach this evening. You better preach this evening. Somebody
preaching.
Help me, Holy Ghost.
Whoa.
Yes, sir.
Holy Ghost. Jeff is really dressed up right now.
I have no idea what that means, but I'm here for it.
Compared to the rest of us.
Is that good or bad?
It's a compliment.
Was that good or bad? I have no idea.
It's good.
It's positive.
It's good.
When it comes from Marcus in this context, it's good. Guys, the Cowboys, of course, open with Tampa Bay, and Cowboys rookie Osa Odighizuwa may have made things a little more difficult for them with his answer about Brady's weaknesses. Listen to this.
So what's Tom Brady's weakness?
Not very mobile. Like, you know, been playing for 21 years, dude is a little older, not too mobile. So I'll say that's probably what it is.
Yeah. Respect then, how important is interior pressure, getting in his face?
Get him off the spot. Passer rating goes down by a lot. So our role is super important this week as far as getting after him and, you know, rushing our butts off.
Marcus. I love the confidence, though.
He's not wrong. He's not wrong, but he shouldn't
feel bad for him.
Anything.
I should just feel bad for him.
Mina, you're absolutely right. And you're absolutely right that he's not wrong, but that ain't the damn point, y'all. Y'all know what the point is. We went through this with Chase Young last year. And Chase Young gonna be in contention for Defensive Player of the Year. He said the same thing. Tom Brady know he ain't mobile, Osa, but he just won a Super Bowl. His seventh, by the way. But listen, man. The one thing I was told when I was with Dallas, don't repeat what we say in this meeting room as far as the D-line is concerned. The young fella just got to learn. We know that about Tom Brady, but that coming out of your mouth, Tom Brady is petty enough, bro, to remember that. I'm not saying you're not going to have some success.
Yes.
He struggles with pressure up the center, but do not say that publicly, my dude. The dude is...
Osa, okay. I love it. But listen to this. If you want to feel old, or maybe if you're Tom Brady, you want to feel
confidence.
Old. Odighi Zua was born in Ohio 1 month before Brady's first start at Michigan. Maybe it's like the Ohio-Michigan thing, Ohio State-Michigan thing. I don't know.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Back here on NFL Live, let's get to the Giants. Saquon Barkley participated in his first padded practice Thursday as he continues his return from an ACL tear last season. Coach Joe Judge has yet to say if Saquon will play week one, but our Jeremy Fowler reports it's trending in that direction. Here's Saquon on taking contact.
Right now I'm not focusing on if I'm making cuts and saying, oh, is that how I was before? I'm focusing on getting football shape and just living in the moment, enjoying the moment, and playing football again.
And no one should be happier about the return of Saquon Barkley healthy than Daniel Jones. When Barkley's played, Jones has averaged 70 more passing yards per game and has thrown nearly twice as many touchdowns in four fewer games. Makes sense, but still a stark number there to pay attention to. Let's roll through some stars coming off some injuries. Mina, what do you expect from Saquon this fall?
Well, Laura, I hope and expect Saquon to look like his whole old self in terms of the explosiveness and athleticism. I worry that he's going to struggle at times behind an offensive line that has not looked good so far in the preseason, both pass pro and run blocking. And unfortunately, that's going to make it a bit of an uphill battle for Saquon beyond just coming back from the injury.
Marcus, how about Christian McCaffrey coming off multiple injuries?
Yeah, for me, listen, he is set up perfectly. Joe Brady is going to figure out how to get Christian McCaffrey in space. Sam Darnold has never played with a player like CMC. And I expect them to have a huge season because this offense is good around him as well. And when you think about what the Carolina Panthers did in bringing in Sam Darnold, they made sure he was surrounded with a pretty solid offensive line. But you get one of the premier offensive players back in the NFL.
Jeff, any concerns about OBJ's health in Cleveland?
Not those who've watched practice recently, Laura. They're saying that Odell Beckham Jr. is cutting well, looking good. He tore his ACL midway through last season, but he is expecting to get a solid workload in week one against the Chiefs. And look, the coaching staff plans to watch him closely, make sure that he's not getting too much, but by all accounts, the Browns should have their number one wide receiver ready to roll for week one.
You know, guys, speaking of the Browns, a really intriguing article right now on ESPN.com where Bill Barnwell predicts the five teams most likely to decline this season. One of the teams on his list is the Browns. Barnwell points out their 2020 point differential of minus 11 as a big reason why. Here's more. Barnwell wrote, quote, "I just don't think they're as far along as that 2020 record looks on paper. By just about any measure we have, the Browns squeezed out more wins out of their performance than we should have expected." Think about it this way. Since 1989, there have been 91 teams that finished with a point differential between minus 25 and minus 1. The Browns were the only team in that group to win at least 11 games. Maybe he's saying there's a little luck involved here, Mina. What do you make of Barnwell's premise?
Yeah, I think that's exactly what he's saying, Laura. I mean, to be the only team out of 91 to win that many games is pretty unusual. I think it's notable. Bill's not saying the Browns are going to be bad or even that they're not going to be a playoff team. He's just looking at whether or not they got lucky last year. And statistically, we have seen teams that have worse point differential and win a lot of close games do tend to regress the next year. Now, that said, there are reasons to think the Browns might improve, one of which is the player that Jeff just mentioned, Odell Beckham Jr., and then the other is the defense. They made a bunch of additions to the defense, in particular the secondary, both in free agency and the draft. And the defense, the pass defense in particular, is where they struggled last season. So I could see a situation where the Browns are less lucky, as Bill suggests, but some of the improvements they make on defense counter that inferior luck.
And Mina, what you just touched on about the defense is why I'm bullish on the Cleveland Browns. And we know the secondary was riddled with injury. I think Denzel Ward can be a top five corner in this league if he can stay healthy for the remainder of a season. You talked about Troy Hill and Johnson coming over to bring not only that experience, but guys that did it at a very high level last year. And then the addition of Jadeveon Clowney. Like, this league now is about pass rush. If everybody wants to understand how you get to the point where you become a championship team, yeah, you have to stop the running. Y'all know I scream that more than anybody. But you have to have guys that can get after the quarterback. And they have two guys, Jadeveon not finishing, but he definitely pressures the quarterback. And we all know what Myles Garrett is. If it was one level of concern, it would be the linebacker position. But to that point, just like we came off the Dallas conversation, MK and L Boogie and Jeff, Dallas's defensive line would make up for those linebackers and allow them to be even better than what they are. I believe the case in Cleveland is these linebackers will benefit from a stout defensive line that can get after the passer with less time to pick on those guys in coverage. So I think they'll be better than they were last year, and last year was pretty damn good.
Yeah, when you think about adding Jadeveon Clowney to a line with Myles Garrett already, it makes you think, at least on paper, this team and this defense should be markedly improved. Some sad news to tell you about today from the NFL. Former NFL wide receiver David Patton, who won three Super Bowl titles in New England with the Patriots, has died due to a motorcycle crash outside Columbia, South Carolina. Patton played for five teams over a 12-year NFL career, but is best known for his four seasons with the Patriots from 2001 to 2004. He caught the only offensive touchdown for the Pats during their first Super Bowl win in the 2001 season against the Rams, hauling in an 8-yard pass from Tom Brady to give New England a 14-3 lead just before halftime. David Patton was 47 years of age.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Justin Herbert took the NFL world by storm last season, setting rookie records in touchdown passes and 300-yard passing games. The Chargers' young quarterback was also cool under duress, posting the second-highest QBR under pressure in the NFL behind only Patrick Mahomes. Even more impressive thinking how he was thrust into that job due to other circumstances. And Mina visited with Herbert in Eugene, Oregon this summer, put together a fantastic piece. Check it out online now if you want to know more about the introverted personality that garnered so much criticism in last year's draft. Or the board game, Herbert is ultra competitive, and so many fun details in this article. Mina, what did you take away from Herbert, just more on the personality angle, because he's such an interesting guy?
Yeah, I was trying to think of things I didn't put in the article to tell you. Two things. One, he doesn't sleep with a pillow. Two, he doesn't own a pair of jeans. I remember being surprised by that. But really, this was a story about leadership, Laura, and what leadership can look like. Because I think sometimes there's a feeling, especially something that gets reinforced ahead of the draft, that it has to look a certain kind of way, that it has to be loud. And it's why players like Justin Herbert or Eli Manning or Kyler Murray get criticized or at least questioned because they don't lead in that way. And what I learned from being around him, and really more so from being around his teammates, is that it doesn't matter. He has a confidence, I think, that doesn't require being attention-seeking or loud. He leads through example, and his teammates really respond to it. I included it in the story a few excerpts from my conversation with Keenan Allen, who, of course, played with a much louder leader in Philip Rivers. And Allen told me that Herbert took control of the locker room, both with his demeanor and his play on the field, which I think bodes well for the Chargers this season.
It's all fantastic information. Guys, I'm going to try sleeping without a pillow tonight and see if it makes me as great as Justin Herbert. Anybody else want to join me there? Okay. Not actually on the same bed. Okay, right.
I don't.
All right. Marcus, let's take it to the field, though. New head coach, new offensive coordinator, rebuilt O-line. How will these changes affect what we see from Herbert on the field?
Yeah. I think you'll see a better version. And look, we get caught up in saying that in the second year, guys have figured out and things are going to transpire and everybody's going to find out who he is as a quarterback. But Justin Herbert, think about this, everybody. Justin Herbert had that type of season playing off of instincts last year. Let me remind you, he was playing off instincts. The dude was thrown into a game he had no idea he was about to play because of a terrible situation with Tyrod Taylor leading into the game. And you see the arm strength. I love when in Mina's article when she was talking to Justin Herbert's, I think, brother, and he was talking about how we just knew he had it. We knew he was a better athlete. We knew he was better than everybody in his quiet confidence. And it showed up on the field. Now, going into your second year, you've asserted yourself as a guy that can play at a very high level. And now you get Coach Staley coming in, a brand new head coach, and you have Joe Lombardi as an OC, and you got a defense that's going to be supported, that's going to support you. This was a team last year that lost so many games at the end of the year. It was almost nauseating. Mina mentioned it a bunch in her tweets. Like, I don't even know how you are a Chargers fan without throwing up every Sunday. So I think Justin Herbert is the answer to the Chargers, and he's going to be complemented by an offensive line and a defense.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of pressure on Joe Lombardi, the new offensive coordinator. Maybe more so than Herbert, frankly, because what he's got is this second-year quarterback who we saw last year has all of the athletic tools, all of the arm talent, the football IQ to succeed in the NFL. He's got a better offensive line this season. So he has to find what I believe is that balance between taking advantage of the instinctiveness, the instinctive skills, rather, that Marcus described, that big arm, which is capable of making throws that are not available to every quarterback in the league, but also scheming up or easier throws for him underneath. And there is a balance, I think, right, between structure and out of structure, the easy stuff and the hard stuff, and having him advance in, like, intellectually as a quarterback, but also and also being willing still to lean on the things that come naturally to him. And I'm curious to see how it plays out, because you saw a glimpse of Drew Brees there. That's really what we saw mostly with Joe Lombardi. Very different quarterback, very different offense. So this is going to be a bit of a mystery.
So I'm definitely not skeptical, but I am curious to see how he handles the second year. I was at the game when it felt like it was a bit of a breakout game against the Bucs in Tampa. And you could not watch Justin Herbert and not realize at that moment that this guy was an absolute stud. Just the way that he was firing the ball, just everything about his demeanor. What I'm curious about, though, is, like, expectations. And he seems, reading Mina's article, very capable of handling those expectations. But coming into last year, the pressure was on Joe Burrow and Tua Tagovailoa. And I feel like if you were to redraft right now, there's a lot of people who would say Herbert should go first. It's almost like Burrow has been forgotten as a result of what Herbert accomplished, and of course partly due to the knee injury that Burrow suffered. But I just wonder now, coming into this moment where, okay, last year we wondered what Herbert is, now we feel like we know. How will he respond to that? It seems like it's going to be good, but I'm very curious to see it.
All right, Jeff, so you're saying GMs would go back and draft Justin Herbert all over again if they could, or if they could get him at the number one spot. Let's get everyone's opinion on this. Of all the quarterbacks that are still on rookie deals, rookie contracts, who would you build your team around first? Marcus, you go.
Joe Burrow. Listen, I have not forgotten what he did before the devastating knee injury he suffered in his rookie year. And we were talking about Joe Burrow and clearly being the franchise for the Cincinnati Bengals, and they can start building around him to become a contender in that tough conference and division that they're in. So Joe Burrow will still be my guy, but Justin Herbert dang sure closed the gap.
I'm going to take the guy who won MVP, Lamar Jackson. It's a little bit of a technicality because he's going to get paid soon, but he's still on his rookie contract.
Yeah.
I mean, just an incredible set of tools, incredible brain, incredible processor, incredible talent. Feels like the clear choice to me.
Mina, you make me sick.
So, I'm definitely going Jeff. Trevor Lawrence, but I want my 5 years. Mina can have her 3 months or whatever it's going to be before the new contract.
Oh, we're doing that?
I want my five years on the rookie deal. Yeah. And even if we weren't, I know we haven't seen Trevor Lawrence yet in the regular season, but I am so bullish on this guy, and I think that this is going to be a generational quarterback. I absolutely say Trevor Lawrence.
Man, Mina on the technicality there. I'm going with Joe Burrow, but I got to tell you guys, this was like splitting hairs for me, actually, between Burrow and Justin Herbert, because I love Justin Herbert too, but there's something about Burrow in just the mental capacity, the way that he leads, and obviously the talent is there. I think, especially if you put him on a team with a slightly better O-line even, he would be the guy that everyone would choose. The 52nd season of Monday Night Football kicks off September 13th with the Ravens in Vegas taking on the Raiders, 8 Eastern on ESPN, ABC, ESPN Deportes, and the ESPN app. Plus, Peyton and Eli Manning debut their Manning cast on ESPN2. And come hang out with me, Mina, Marcus, and Dan, as well as the Daily Wager crew as we take you between the lines on ESPN Plus. Got you covered for the opening of Monday Night Football. Let's read and react, take a closer look at some of this year's rookie class. And the Lions drafted Penei Sewell with the number 7 pick in this year's draft. But after Sewell opted out of the 2020 college football season, the rookie offensive lineman still shaking off some of the rust. Here's Lions GM Brad Holmes on Sewell's progress.
Yeah, well, I believe that he will be ready for week one. I think he's ready now. You know, that's a tough position to play out there on that island. What he's done, now I know it's magnified about what may be perceived and seen as a hiccup here or there, but it's so much other good stuff that may be kind of hidden when you really deep dive the film, you know, little subtle nuances that he's doing that is going to make a big difference.
Marcus, any concern on the early struggles from Sewell?
I don't, and it's because he's a rookie, but I do. The one thing I would tell people, I expect a Tristan Wirfs type of performance from Penei Sewell because of the athleticism and his ability to move. And that's why people were so enamored with him coming out of college, was the athletic ability and the strength and the nastiness in which he plays the game with. Technique is always the issue for young linemen, and he'll get that fixed.
The Bengals drafted receiver Ja'Marr Chase out of LSU at number 5 overall to reunite with his teammate Joe Burrow in Cincinnati. Chase, like Sewell, also opted out of the 2020 college football season, has struggled a bit this preseason. It's not been pretty for Ja'Marr Chase. He's got 3 drops on just 5 targets. That's tied for the most drops by any player this preseason and the most by any receiver. Mina, you concerned about all the drops?
Well, Laura, I think it's notable that this was not an issue for Ja'Marr Chase at LSU, drops specifically. I don't think there's anything wrong with his hands. Watching them replayed, it looks to me more like an adjustment to NFL speed, specifically the speed of the defenders he's playing. The one with Landon Collins jumps out, where he is going to have to get used to the physicality of the league and sort of the way in which he adjusts his body in response to that speed and physicality, and I think he'll make that adjustment.
Year 3 together for Cliff Kingsbury and Kyler Murray. The duo has yet to lead the Cardinals to a playoff berth. They've added weapons to the offense each year. DeAndre Hopkins joining last season, A.J. Green this offseason, but the offense has yet to achieve consistency. Arizona's offense did get off to a hot start last season, ranking top 7 in the league in points per game, yards per game, and EPA per game through their first 8 games. But they fell off the cliff in the second half, ranking 22nd or worst in all those same categories, while finishing with an 8-8 record. We're now in year three of this Kyler Kingsbury marriage. Amina, how concerned are you at this point about this offense?
I'm not smiling because the offense is struggling. I'm smiling because falling off a cliff. And it's really, if your name is Cliff, there's a lot of pressure on you because you're setting up headlines for struggles. Here's the thing, Laura. The air raid offense, which is sort of, you know, what we're seeing, or it's a version of that, it's predicated on winning with tempo and talent. They're fast, they're getting to the line, they're not waiting for the clock to run out, and they're hoping to win with the talent of their wide receivers just beating their guys. And while that does work in college and occasionally works in the NFL, it requires more to succeed consistently in the National Football League. It's about scheme, it's about misdirection more than ever, and it's about getting these mental advantages. So, for example, look at this. The Cardinals ranked last in the league in pre-snap motion, which I know Dan Orlovsky is watching. He likes to call it a cheat code for offenses because it gives you an advantage, shout out to Dan, over defenses both in the run and the pass, and gives your quarterback information. Why would you not take that cheat code that's available to you? Again, it's about finding edges that are different from the ones you have in college, and we haven't really seen the Arizona offense lean into those edges.
MK, I love you, and respectfully, I know that you handled that situation with delicacy when you were talking about this situation in Arizona. Cliff Kingsbury better stop being drunk on Kyler Murray's ability and start building the offense around all of this other talent that you have on this football team. You and I talked about it last season, MK, about not using DeAndre Hopkins to move him around and get him matched up in different situations, as opposed to saying DeAndre Hopkins is good, let's line him up to the left, and we're going to throw the ball to him, and then we'll see if he can make a play. The bottom line is this. Kyler Murray got injured last year, and this offense fell off a cliff. To me, that tells me that you are thinking that your quarterback is overcoming and doing all of the things that you lacking from a play calling standpoint. I will give him credit for this. He did try to assert himself in the run game a little bit towards the end of the season. But the bottom line is you have all of this talent. You've drafted well. This roster is currently constructed with a lot of really good football players. Cliff Kingsbury is going to have to expand beyond what Kyler Murray's talents are and allow him to facilitate sometimes and just be a straight point guard, as opposed to saying, go out there every Sunday, run around, figure out how to improv, and help us win football games. It's got to be more than that, and I expect to see that from Cliff this year.
Yeah, by the way, that's Cliff with a K. Let's see how many times we can talk about falling off a cliff. One thing, too, guys, that division is so tough. And despite all the moves and additions this offseason, ESPN's FBI still isn't high on Arizona. They're projecting them to go 8-9 this season. How about this, guys? 11-year-old Bills fan Joshie Hutchinson celebrated his final chemotherapy session, as any good Bills fan would, jumping through a table and ringing the bell. Josh Allen actually saw this video. He tweeted, "This is awesome. We concur." Let's see it one more time. Let's see him jump through that table. Yes, let's go. Congratulations, young man.
That's
really
it,
excited
baby.
For you and your family.
Yes, sir.
Great news. Let's get to the San Francisco 49ers. After drafting Trey Lance, number 3 overall in this year's draft, and keeping quarterback Jimmy Garoppolo on the roster, 49ers coach Kyle Shanahan's refusing to reveal who his week one starter will be. Yesterday was no exception. Listen to this.
Is your punt returner right now on your 53-man?
I believe so. Yeah.
Who's that going to be?
You'll see.
Same time, you announce the quarterback.
I don't need to announce the quarterback. I don't think I need to announce the starting punt returner either, but I bet you guys can figure it out.
All right, so listen, he's right. Like, he doesn't have to do it. But, Jeff, given what you know about Kyle Shanahan, what you've heard from him in the past, is it surprising that he's not just saying that Trey Lance is the outright starter?
No, it is not surprising at all, especially knowing Kyle. And by the way, this is the one surprising factor, I guess, in all this is that the fact that we expect Jimmy Garoppolo actually to be the starter on week one is that Kyle Shanahan is a guy all last season who spent it just saying, man, I can't wait to have a mobile quarterback someday. I don't want a statue quarterback. And yes, that feels like a shot at Jimmy G, but it also speaks to what Kyle really wants to do with his offense, with what Trey Lance can do. The one thing I would also say, though, is that in Kyle I trust when it comes to these decisions. He wants Trey Lance to be in there as bad as anybody in the world. And if he's thinking that Jimmy gives them the best chance to win at this point, he's probably right. So I think that whatever decision Kyle makes at this point is probably the right one, just based on his desire to have Trey Lance in that game.
Right, yeah, we already said it. But, I mean, they drafted Trey Lance number 3 overall, and they traded a lot to get to that spot in the draft. So certainly the motivation is there. Let's take it on the field, Marcus, because we know we are going to see Trey Lance, right? So when he is under center, what does the 49ers run game look like with him in there?
Preparation throughout a week gives you the most confidence going into a game on Sundays. You cannot prepare for this. I'm telling y'all, and I know they got a lot of defense coordinators with great minds that play a lot of great football. But when you got offenses like Kyle Shanahan with an athletic quarterback with 3 options in one play, can literally run 3 different plays in one play call, it's the dilemma of all dilemmas. And that's why he's had so much success offensively. And that's why I was screaming, don't draft Mac Jones, draft that. Because that almost makes you unstoppable at times throughout an NFL season. Jimmy Garoppolo was the quarterback, y'all, when San Francisco went and ran for 300 yards in the NFC Championship and threw 8 passes with their quarterback. Now imagine with this dude, once he comes up to speed and becomes the passer that Kyle is looking for, and he's giving this zone read looks, and Deebo Samuel is running a slant and breaking a tackle and going for 80. It's a problem, y'all. I'm about to start sweating. And this is why I don't want to coach, because I don't want the responsibility of getting 40 hung on my football team and the owner coming to meeting on Monday looking at me like I'm stupid. I don't have any answers for that. And good luck with Kyle Shanahan, y'all, and the athletic quarterback.
I mean, Mina, Kyle Shanahan in this offense probably going to make a lot of defensive coordinators look stupid.
How do you stop Raheem Mostert? We talk so much about Trey Lance. I was thinking about how when he was healthy, he's one of the fastest running backs, if not the fastest, in the NFL. Next Gen Stats said he was the only player in the league to top 23 miles per hour. He's basically a track star. And the thing about defending a back like that is you got to make the right. Like, you lose half a second, half a step as a linebacker. You pause because you're worried that Trey Lance might keep and Mostert is gone. It is an absolute nightmare for linebackers. I really, you just got to bet. You just got to roll the dice, I suppose, and hope that you're right. Like, this is going to be such a nightmare. The combination of Trey Lance and Raheem Mostert in particular is devastating for run defense.
You know, Marcus, when you think about the 49ers in general in that division, the other thing that we should not gloss over is that they obviously were not healthy last year, but big returns on the defensive side of the ball that should help in a big way too, right?
Yes, absolutely. Obviously, the big one is Bosa getting back and Armstead. But look, Javon Kinlaw has been really good. Curry's been really – they've shown depth along this defensive line, and not to mention Fred Warner, who doesn't get a lot of credit, who is a tremendous linebacker. This is a complete team, and it's making me rethink why I got the Rams winning the division, but I'm going to stay with them because I think Matt Stafford going to be able to do something. I'm scared, though, y'all. San Francisco is squatted up.
I thought you were about to switch up there. We're going to follow up on that. You still got the Rams in the NFC West. We'll find out. All right, got time for one more thing before we go. Marcus, I want you to listen closely to Tom Brady here.
I think the one thing about football that's changed over the years, which I think is really hard for someone like me who's played a long time to watch, is like it's not being taught the right way. Like, a quarterback should only throw the ball to certain places because your receiver is in danger of getting hit. For example, when I used to play against Ray Lewis, I wouldn't throw the ball to the middle of the field because he'd go after you and he would hit, like, and we didn't always have the biggest receivers, but he would hit him and knock him out of the game. Mm. And now every hard hit is a penalty on the defense. So I feel like they penalize defensive players for offensive mistakes. Mm. So, like, if a quarterback – I was watching the Chicago Bear game.
the quarterback
messes up, doesn't see the blitzer, or the line screws up. I don't know what happened. But the quarterback or the line on offense, the defensive player comes in and hits him hard, and they throw a flag on the defense. So they've almost moved the protection of your opponent to you, as opposed to where it should be, which is on yourself. Like, if you're a quarterback, you got to protect yourself and your players. It shouldn't be the responsibility of your opponent to protect you.
No. Marcus?
Wow.
Y'all ever heard of love languages? That was a love language just now, okay? That, I mean,
we're sending you on a roller coaster, Swaguna, in the show.
I have never liked Tom Brady more than I like Tom Brady for that soliloquy he just gave right there, y'all. That is, I don't know if a defensive player has ever articulated it that well, but that is exactly how we feel. Like, shouldn't some of the responsibility of these guys be to protect themselves when we going 100 miles an hour trying to make a tackle? But I don't, y'all, is, am I, like, do I love Tom Brady? Somebody help me, because I'm
think you love him now.
It means
sounds like you do.
What do you think?
It's okay.
Yeah, I mean, Marcus is not alone in the outpouring of love. It's coming from defensive players across the NFL seeing this clip, because this is a sentiment that he's expressing that a lot of defensive players have been feeling for a long time. And it is interesting coming from a quarterback who, as Brady laid out, had to be cognizant of that dynamic in the past.
You know, hey, just throw what Tom Brady just did on the new Drake album and see how Marcus likes it then, because he was vibing to that before.
Certified lover boy.
We'll see you next week.
Tom Brady, much love, my brother.